Hey, Seamsiders. Today I have another quilt talk about one of my quilts in the Southern White Amnesia collection. If you're new to this collection, Southern White Amnesia is a body of work that I've made in the last couple years that explores the stories that Southern White families tell and don't tell about their own family histories. The particular piece we're talking about today is called Our Children, and it serves as the preamble or the foundation for a piece I talked about recently called Snake Handler. You can also find another quilt talk on Silver Dollar. All of these are pieces in Southern White Amnesia collection. For today, though, sit back, relax, and I hope you find good points of inspiration and reflection as we discuss Our Children. I got a question I like to ask sometimes in conversations with another white person. And that question is, when did you first realize you were white? BIPOC folks can often remember the moment when they suddenly felt different from the white folks around them. But it's not a question that us white folks have to think about very often for ourselves. So today, I want to tell you a story about the moment I first realized I was white. I was in kindergarten, so it must have been 1985, and I was on the playground at recess, palling around with my friend Lakeisha Jenkins, who I still remember to this day would wear those elastic hair ties, the one with two big plastic balls on them, and she would coordinate those hair ties with her outfit. I mean, this was next level in kindergarten. Well, that day on the playground, Lakeisha gave me the most poetic pet name I had ever heard. And to this day, is still one of the sweetest ones I can think of. It's right up there with the Spanish, mi vida, my life. I remember Lakeisha and I were playing out on the playground, and in a moment of pure, unbridled joy, I don't know what had just happened, she looked at me and called me Honey Child. And I thought that was the best, the sweetest thing I'd ever been called. So one night, soon after, might have been the same night, we were at the dinner table as a family, me and my parents and my younger brother. And I looked at my younger brother and I said, "Would you pass the mustard, honey child?" And I don't remember exactly what my dad said after that. That's lost to history. I can tell you how it lives in my mind, and that is, we don't say that. And when I reflect back on that moment, the way it lives in my memory, I see so many things coming together for that young 5-year-old Zach sitting at the table who just loved his brother and wanted to give him the name that he had been given that was so sweet. In that moment, I internalized a lot of different messages. One was definitely about race, that I, as a white person, don't say things like honey child. One was about gender and sex, that I, as a male, don't use such tender terms of expression. And there was definitely messages about sexuality, that using terms like honey child just wasn't something boys and men did. And as I think back on that moment, I wonder, what parts of me did I turn off as I internalized these different messages? I wonder, the next day when I got to school, did I look at Lakeisha differently? I don't know. I hope not. I do know that I don't think I ever said honey child again, which makes me wonder, why did I make myself smaller? Why did I not say, you know what, though? Actually, I like Honey Child. Actually, it's got a lot going for it. I'm going to own it. But that's not what 5-year-old me did. So as an adult, the work is to turn those switches back on, to look back on all the switches that have been turned off and find ways to turn them back on. That's why I do so much of this work that I do. I have another story I want to tell you. Another one about race and realization. Fast forward now about 15 years. I'm in college. I'm feeling cute. I'm at a party. I'm sitting on a couch with a young black woman. And our forearms are kind of resting. You know, we're holding our drinks. And our arms are kind of resting side by side. And we both have this moment, I don't know who called it first, where we realize that she and I shared the same skin tone. yet people called her black and they called me white. And that was a moment for me as a young person where a light bulb went off. And I realized that I'd been living in some kind of artificially constructed system that said, oh, the differences between white and black folks are very clear. Except here, in this moment, on that couch, they weren't. So what made me white and her black? That leads us to Our Children. Our Children is a preamble to Snake Handler. And if you haven't listened to that conversation, I'd encourage you to go back and do that. You can do it after this. Our Children introduces the snake that Snake Handler asks you to handle. This textile piece isn't technically a quilt because it's a single layer. It was made all from materials from the same thrift store in Spruce Pine, North Carolina, that I made the Snake Handler piece out of. The foundation of this piece was a large scarf from a South Asian country, maybe Bangladesh. It was velour on top, an ivory-covered velour, and an ivory-colored silk on the back. There was hand-embroidered beads and mirror work along each of the borders. It was gorgeous. I also picked up a fleece blanket, a micro-fleece blanket, just a shade darker. Maybe we'd call this one toasted marshmallow. I took the foundation, the scarf, and I cut away three sides of the seams so that it could fall open on the fourth side and create this large rectangular foundation of about 4 feet by 7 or 8 feet. I then took the micro fleece blanket and began hand cutting out letters for this allegory that I would like to read for you here in just a moment. I applied those letters by hand, sewing them top to bottom, and the letters of this allegory start off nice and neat, but seem to fall apart as they meander their way down the piece, which makes it a little hard to read. It kind of trails off. But here goes. I'll read for you the text of Our Children, which is what I call a fragment of an allegory that I wrote explaining how whiteness enters the world. And just a note before we read that the word our in this is spoken from the point of view of a white narrator to a white audience. Here goes. Our children are born with a snake in the crib. This guardian serpent whispers silver-tongued seeds into the open ears of our children that bloom later in life. Whispers like, all this belongs to you. Whispers like, you have all this because you work so hard. Whispers like, they don't work hard like you. I think what strikes me so much about this piece, and what strikes a lot of people when they would come into the studio while I was working on it, is the sumptuousness of the textures of the velour and of the microfleece. Almost without fail, people that would come to my table would just start touching, rubbing their hands over this fabric. And I love that we see there the magic of the textile, the technology of the textile, right? If we think of technology meaning the application of science to get a result. Well, here I learned that I could use the texture of fabric to bring people into a conversation. This was so soft, you couldn't resist touching it. So here we are. Your hand is already on the piece. Let's talk about it. This story, Our Children, with the snake in the crib, is really uncomfortable. You're in the middle of a story about a snake in a crib with a young child. If you were to walk into a room and you saw a literal snake in a literal crib with a literal child, it would be cause for panic. You would act immediately. Yet that's not what happens in this allegory. In this allegory, the snake is a guardian serpent. And this guardian whispers things into the child's ears that bloom much later in life. The things this guardian serpent whispers, these silver-tongued seeds, aren't at all thoughtful, factual-based observations of how the world works. Instead, they're messages that the child internalizes about their own position in society, their own elevated position in society. These whispers convince the child over time that they can have anything they want, that they work hard, they deserve it. And other people too could have exactly what they have if only they worked as hard. I'm not sure that's true. Depending on which study you reference, the average worker who is black earns 75 cents for every dollar that the average worker who is white earns. So here you got two people working side by side, each of them working hard, one of them continuing to get the short shrift. One curious thing about this composition is the way the text is arranged. The letters are arranged in a style, an ancient writing style, called boustrophedon, which is Greek for as the ox plows the field. You can imagine how an ox plowing a field would make one long row, and when it got to the other side, would turn around and make another long row back in the opposite direction. Get to the other edge, turn around, and make another long row back in the original direction, snaking its way through the field. This was an ancient way of writing introduced to me by weaver Alicia Mann, and I'm so grateful. What boustrophedon does for this piece is that it introduces an element of almost hypnosis, almost snake charming, if you will, because your eyes, as you read, it's a little challenging at first, reading backwards and snaking back and forth, but your eyes do begin to accommodate the text. And by the end, you're just kind of weaving back and forth, reading these words. And when you're in that space, I wonder what unlocks for you. I hope what it unlocks in the viewer's mind when they see this piece, the ability to see the silver-tongued seeds that may have been planted in them from a very young age, imperceptibly so. And once we see these silver-tongued seeds at work in our life, germinated and rooted, growing and flowering, once we see these seeds, that we begin to work to extract them from our garden. Because these seeds are truly weeds that are choking us out, choking us from the life that we're meant to live, a life of unity and oneness with each other. I mentioned earlier that I do this work as a way of exploring how to turn back on all those switches that got turned off as a child. These messages that we internalize go deep. And I wonder what disservice we do to ourselves when we shoehorn ourselves into these tiny little boxes that say, because I am this, I have to act like that. It creates a very narrow bandwidth for us to live our lives. It creates loss because it turns off so many other possibilities for ways that we can move through this world. If this is a dynamic that does not serve us, then why do we do it generation after generation? I think the answer is to maintain a certain status quo. And with all that said, I think you're ready to listen to Snake Handler if you haven't heard that yet. Snake Handler is a piece that asks the viewer to examine privilege as they see it in their own life and to ask what they're willing to let go of in order to gain something so much greater. And I suppose I'll wrap up all of this like this. And that is, the other day when I was thinking about what I wanted to share with y'all, I was sitting on a park bench, one of my favorites where I often sit, looking over a large pond. And somehow I got to thinking about tattoos and how for years I thought, well, maybe I'll get a tattoo once I figure out what it is I want permanently embedded into my skin. But I've never come up with anything that seemed worthy enough of such a long-lasting position. And then in that moment, I thought, well, dang, maybe it's Honeychild. So y'all stay tuned. Wherever you are listening to this conversation, I hope that you're happy, healthy, safe, and warm. I hope you're up to something good and sowing something good. And I hope to see you soon. Take care.